The Manscaped Performance Package 5.0 Ultra has everything you need to prepare that summer bod. Every man knows how scary it can get when going for a close shave below the belt. That's why I trust Manscaped for all my sensitive areas. Inside this package, you'll find the star of the show, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. Their fifth generation trimmers features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. We also have dual LED spotlights to provide contrast on multiple skin tones, three length setting combs, and oh, did I mention this trimmer is waterproof too? Beach, lake, shower, this razor will devour even the strongest pubes. Now that you have the perfect haircut, use Manscaped's liquid formulations to keep that freshness even at the hottest summer barbecues. The Crop Soother, aftershave lotion and crop preserver, anti-chafe ball deodorant. Once they touch your sack, you'll never go back. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 5.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. More wet products? Say no more. Manscaped's new Buff Bundle is all you need to keep the summer heat a breeze. The bundle includes their signature silicone scrubber and body wash. Ditch your nasty loofah and grab a taste of freshness.
All aboard!
Let's do that hockey.
Welcome to Dauber Prospects Report, a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. This is report number 79. I'm Victor Nuno, one of the co-hosts here. Glad to be back and glad to see you again, my friend, Peter Harling. How you doing, Pete?
Yeah, man. Doing pretty good. It's been a few episodes since we've been together. So, yeah, it's good to be back in full swing on the show. It's hockey season's in full swing too, right? Like, we've got a number, all the leagues are going, we got a number of games, we got prospect tournaments coming up, we got draft rankings coming out and whatnot. So yeah, and we're full swing now, baby.
Yeah, for sure. It's been so fun. Got a few matchups under the belt, got a couple.
How you doing?
Mostly pretty well, surprisingly well in some of my dynasties. I had a heartbreaker loss in one of my redraft leagues this past week. I was like, you know, one of those days where you're winning by a lot, like I think it was like 20 or 30 points on Saturday. I came into the day leading and then I left the night losing by like the same amount. I was like, how did this happen? terrible. Like all the random guys popped off on my opponent's team. You know how that goes.
Yeah, you can be having a great week and then the dreaded Saturday full slate, it can all change in a night. I'm actually doing pretty good in most of my leagues. The one I'm not doing well in is the Listener League. I think it's time to blow it up and go tank and rebuild there, baby. So if anyone is in the DPR show Peter League and wants to pick some of my veterans off, take them off my hands and give me some picks and prospects, I'm all ears.
There you go. Send your horrible trade offers to...
That's right. Eat. That's right.
Well, today, we're going to talk about something that'll be really fun. We're going to talk about the 2025 draft, and it's still real early. We know that this is a cycle. It's a process. Some of these guys may be different when their names are called in June, but it's good to start getting an idea of who the names are and get some initial thoughts on them. So that's what we're going to do on this episode, some 2025 draftees. Before we do that, I want to remind you that this episode is brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network and DraftKings. Follow at HockeyPodNet for all the great hockey podcasts. You can use DraftKings promo code THPN for listening to the show, and more on that in a bit. We're also proudly sponsored by Fantrax, the ultimate league manager for any dynasty sport you play. It's completely customizable for however you want to set up your league, from scoring categories, an amazing draft room to host the draft, draft pick trading, and a treasury option, plus so much more. Use our promo code to sign up for a free league using the link fantrax.com/DPR show. All right, Pete. So we each kind of split up some guys that we're interested in talking about, and I believe you have the first one.
Yeah. All right. So let's kick it off. What's interesting about this draft, Victor, before I dive too into my single guy here, is one of the things I'm most interested about in this year's draft class is I don't think there is a clear-cut consensus, hard yes, on who is going to be the first overall pick. I mean, the early candidate is James Haggins But you can make an argument based on the way the season started that there are a number of players that could contend for the first overall pick. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion at this point. I think we can concede at this time who we project to be number one, but that is very much to be determined as the season progresses, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. It's I don't think we may see. Well, I'll talk about Higgins in a little bit. We may see a wire to wire number one, but I think it's pretty reasonable to assume that there's going to be some fluctuation throughout the season, and someone could very well pass him. He's not so locked in like a Bedard or like an Austin Matthews or McDavid or something like that.
And usually in years where you don't have a consensus number one, it's like it's this guy or that guy, Sagan or Hall or whoever. Like there's like a half a dozen guys who at this point you could make an argument for the for their case. So I'll start with my guy. The first guy is Porter Mouton. He's the consolidated at this time by EP rankings, number two, and he's a real legit contender for first overall, I would say. The reason why I think that is as follows. He's 6'3", he's 191 pound. Pretty sure he's a right winger. So that's a bit of a knock against him. He's in the Ontario Hockey League playing for the Brampton Steelheads, formerly known as Mississauga. He has just turned 18 already. His birthday was October 26. So this is now his third campaign in the OHL as a junior player. So he's in his junior season. And he's a little bit older of a player for this draft class with perhaps a little bit less development time or curve or arc on his file. And I know that you prefer the younger guys because, you know, there's more opportunity for them to continue to grow. And when they're on the younger side and they just barely old enough for the draft class, and then they still are producing at a level as some of the older guys, like that can be really encouraging as to where they might go. But some players peak at 17 years old or 18 years old. So what I look for, Victor, is steady progression, no matter how old you are. Like if you're 16, 18, 19, or 20, are you still progressing in the right direction or are we kind of flatlined? So right now, Porter Mouton is the leading scorer in the Ontario Hockey League. He's got 12 goals and 13 assists, a nice balance of goals versus assists, 25 points through 11 games. That's on pace for 2.27 points per game as we speak. And he is continuing to steadily develop in an upward direction. His rookie season was 35 points in 61 games with Sarnia and Mississauga. He was traded. And then last year, his sophomore season, he had 71 points in 60 games. 17 points in 7 games played as captain of Team Canada at the U18s last season as well, which was really impressive. Currently, he's on pace for 154 points in his draft year as a junior, as I mentioned. And I think he should pretty much be a lock for Team Canada at the World Juniors. I mean, he's dominating the OHL. He's 18 years old, so he's not that young for a 19-year-old's tournament. He captained Canada at the Hlinkas, like I said. So, you know, Team Canada obviously is very familiar with him and likes him very much. I'm really actually not discouraged, Victor, by the fact that he's an older age for the draft class because the development curve is projecting up like a rocket, like I said, I like. And he's got great size and he's got a great skill combination. He can dominate games already at an elite level. Perhaps I can concede the negative point to his position, right? He's not a center, he's not a defense, and drafting it this high in the draft, all other factors being equal, teams will prefer a center or a D. So that could work against him a little bit. Maybe he converts to a center. Maybe a team sees him as a center. Who knows? We'll find out at the end of June there. So this guy checks a lot of boxes. Size, he knows how to use it. He's got skill. He finishes well. He scores goal. He has hockey sense. He makes plays. He gets assists. His skating and speed are not a concern. He plays with pace. He's got leadership qualities. Like check, 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 check all the boxes. Mason's hockey ranking app has him on pace for a superstar potential, 100 points. And like I said, you like to see that continuous incline in his development. And he's gone from 68 to 83 to 106 point seasons and projecting all the way up from, you a second line to first line to superstar potential. He's just trending up hard, and hopefully he's not peaking. He continues to go. Mason gives him some comparables like Adam Fantilli, Kyle Connor, and Kirby Doc. Those are all pretty nice comparables. So overall, I think this is a player who I could see going number one, and I have extreme interest in him in fantasy drafts, specifically in the leagues that I'm in, because most of those are multi-cat leagues where it's not just points and it's full keeper dynasty. So as a player, if I draft him, I'm okay with incubating him for a couple of seasons and seeing how he develops and saving a roster spot for him. I think the upside is first line top six player, potentially an 80-point NHL player with lots of peripheral juice as well. Am I missing anything on Mortone? Am I over excited about him or under excited about
It doesn't sound like you're going to be underexcited about him
him?
based on what I heard, but no, I agree. I mean, and the thing that you said about the reason why he might not go number one might be more due to his position than anything, because I can't remember the last time a winger went number one. It's pretty rare, at least a clear winger without the potential to maybe play center. I don't really see him as a
Ovechkin?
center. Oh yeah, well that would be a good one. Well, he's clearly not that level, I would say.
No, no.
But yeah, I think that you have to be really, really special, and Ovechkin was, to be a winger and go that high. So that's not necessarily a knock on him. It's just, will he go number one? That doesn't necessarily matter. In fact, for fantasy, you might want him to slide a little bit so you could get him at a little bit more of a value. That would be nice. We're not doing you any favors for that, talking him up. But I remember watching the U18s and just thinking, like, who's this underager who's huge and just really fantastic? Like, he really caught my eye. And like you said, the progression of the ranking app, like, it's just a linear ascension. We'll see if that continues. So far, so good. And yeah, I think seeing him at the World Juniors seems very likely at this point, the U20 World Juniors. So yeah, he's definitely a good one. I think that he's someone that you're going to probably want in fantasy. And yeah, he certainly has that top six, maybe even top line upside. So yeah, he's a good one. I don't think he'll go number one just for those reasons. I think that it's most likely going to be a center, because I don't think this is the strongest D year, although there might be one later that we'll talk about who could push for that. Should we move on to the
Yes, let's get down to the
next guy?
number one ranked guy.
Yeah, we've already mentioned him a couple of times. So James Higgins, we were just talking before we came on how this isn't like the best year for the American drafted players, but there are a couple of top end guys that will be pretty good. And James Higgins is definitely there. He's been the presumed number one for a while. He is currently the number one. He's number one on pretty much all lists that you will see, and on EP's consolidated, TSN, Craig Button, McKean's, Flo, all of them have him at number one. But we'll see if it stays that way. He is another older for this draft class. And to that point that you mentioned, it's not necessarily a knock on them. I mean, Fantilli was one of those guys too. And, it can work out just fine. It's kind of just one of those things where if they're already dominating their competition because they're bigger, older, and stronger, that may or may not translate. So it's something to think about, but it's not necessarily a knock on them if they are older and doing great. Austin Matthews was another one, really old for his draft class. That worked out just fine. So it's not necessarily a huge problem. But Higgins is a November 3rd birthday. So he'll be, as we're recording this, as you're hearing this, he will be 18 most of his draft season. He's 5'10, 176 pounds, and left shot center. He was at the USNTP last year. He had 102 points in 58 games at the USNTP. In fact, I pulled up a stat line here and I cut off the names. And you're obviously looking at the notes with me, Pete. I think if you looked at these two stat lines, it would be hard to tell who was who if I said one of these was Jack Hughes and one of these was James Higgins. They look really similar. I
Yes,
don't know
they
if you could
do.
even, I'm not
Yes,
even
they
sure if
do.
you could tell them apart. I know which one's which.
Well, the years give it away.
The years give it away. I could have cut that off. It would have been harder for you to tell. And the fact that
They're almost identical, so like
They're almost identical. Jack Hughes was the captain of the U18 team, is really the one difference that really easily gives it away. But if you didn't know that for sure. The other reason I bring this up is he had 22 points in 7 games at the U18s, the gold medal game that they maybe should have won before some bonehead plays gave some power plays to Canada and they capitalized and took over that game. But he did everything he could to help the Americans win. In fact, he set a record that was set by, he broke a record set by Nikita Kucherov, which was records for most points at a U18 for a D minus one player. 22 points in 7 games is insane. That was big. So he, and that was better than what Jack Hughes did in his U18 D minus one. So he's got some really great numbers at the program and with Team USA. Now he's at Boston College, 6 points in 4 games. Not too shabby. I think that Higgins is going to be in the running for the Hobey Baker again this year. I say again, not that he was last year, but he is a younger player, freshman. And I don't know if you realize this, Pete, but we've had back-to-back ho freshman Hobey Baker winners in Fantilli and Celebrini. Can you name the other two freshman Hobey Baker winners? They were a lot longer ago.
They
I'm putting
went
you on the
back to
spot.
back.
No, they were not this. They were not back to back, but they were the only other two freshmen to ever win the Hobey Baker.
Jack Eichel.
Yep. And then longer, much longer ago, retired now. Played for the
Not
Ducks.
Johnny Gaudreau. Oh, Paul Kariya.
All Korea. Yep. So there's only been four. And two of them were in the last 2 years, and we might have another. At least he's going to have a good shot at it. Back to back to
Could
back would
be
be
a
insane.
reoccurring trend coming along here.
I think with the changes in the NCAA and the CHL agreements that are happening, there might be a shift to more of that. I think you're right. And so that's going to be really fun to see. I think that because he's dominating college hockey, and if he continues to do so, that's going to be a pretty strong resume to overcome some of what some of the other players are doing, and the fact that he is a center. Will he be a center, though? I made some comparisons to Jack Hughes. He might be one of those guys who could shift to the wing at some point, but he plays like a center. He's very shifty. He's very dynamic. He's really good playmaker. He's got a great shot too, and he's really, really fast. Great, you know, be able to back check hard. He's got pretty decent two-way game. So I think that he does stick at center, but if he doesn't, or if there are questions about that, that might be a reason why he slides and doesn't go number one. But I think this guy's a pretty, like Martone, probably a lock for top five. Can't see them sliding too much more than that. And he does actually hit a fair amount. He hits and shoots a fair amount. He doesn't block a whole lot, but I think James Higgins, you know, he's looking like a point per game, you know, top line center slash winger is kind of what he's projecting at. And so I'm really excited to see the rest of his season at BC. He's got some pretty good players there to play with, and they're a really good team. So that certainly helps his case as well. But what are your thoughts on Higgins?
Well, there's a lot to like there. I'm looking forward to seeing a little bit more of him. I don't get to see a lot of national team games, but going to the one in Guelph for the Top Prospects Challenge, and he'll be on the World Junior roster for the Americans, I hope. They're gonna have a pretty all-star team, the Americans. So, an underage player like him has a legit chance to make the team, but he's not a lock. But I really hope to see him there. Yeah, I'm in the camp that he's the number one prospect overall right now as well. I have him projected on number one for what it's worth on October 30th as we record this, very, very early in the draft season. But we'll see if he can hold on to it, if he can take the ball and run and maintain. He's playing at a higher level at college this season, so we'll see how he can keep up with that pace and the size and the speed of that game. But yeah, I'm all in on James Higgins. I'm a fan.
Nice. Who's your next one?
Michael Misa. So he is the consolidated fifth overall on EP. He's 6'1", 185. He's a center or left winger playing for the Saginaw Spirit. He's 17 years old. He's turning 18 on February 16th, which, by the way, shares a birthday with my daughter, Jocelyn. He's now in his third season in the OHL, not because he's older like Porter Marton, but because he had exceptional status. He got into the league at an earlier age, so he's already 3 out of his 4 years down, so he's probably just got the one more season of junior hockey before he's turning pro. And the way you just mentioned there that things are changing with the NCAA CHL rule. Who knows where he might be able to play next season? It could be dealer's choice. His point per game pace, actually, Victor. You know, I talked with Porter Marton about liking to see that steady progression, inclining points. His point per game pace dipped from 1.24 points per game as a rookie, as an underage exceptional status player, which is amazing. To 1.12 last season in his sophomore season. And when you scout with just looking at the stat line, you're always setting yourself up for disaster or failure there without knowing the context. And the context of that situation was the fact that the Spirit were a powerhouse roster. They went all the way to the Memorial Cup and then won it with some veteran star players. So he was not the go-to guy. He wasn't buried on the roster. He was like their bleeding scorer still, but you know, he wasn't getting all of the ice time and opportunity that he's getting this season, as many of those players have graduated and moved on, or the season before when they weren't quite as good. So he's off to an exceptional start in his draft year this season. He's outpacing the previous exceptional players in their draft season with 17 goals and 9 assists and 26 points through 13 games, which is a 2 point per game pace, of course, and he's on pace for 136 points. Your colleague at EP Ringside, Lauren Kelly, had a nice little article. Part of it featured him. It's, you know, OHL players who's hot. And you can't see it in the show notes, but there's a graphic there where it shows his point production versus the other top exceptional status players in their draft year through this many games. And Mises got, like I said, 10 goals and 12 points. McDavid had 7 goals and 16 points. And Tavares had 6 goals and 11 points. Connor Bedard had 5 goals and 9 points. And Shane Wright had 2 goals and 8 points. So, you know, he's holding class with some players that turned out to be pretty all right. His older but slightly smaller brother, Luke Miso, was, as you may recall, was just drafted in Vegas, a 2024 draft picked by Calgary Flames. He went 150th overall. He's a fifth round pick, and he is playing in his final season in the OHL. So don't get those two confused, but they're both very good. Michael has significantly more upside, though. The skill level is higher. He's got a better size for starters, and he's got a really great motor. You know, he's a tenacious forechecker. He's effective two-way player, but he has first line NHL offensive upside as well. I'm not so sure about all of those factors with his brother Michael. This year, he's going to be the guy in Saginaw. Parekh is still there, right? So he's not on an island. But gone are Hunter Haight, Owen Beck, Josh Bloom, Roden DiNiccio, Matias Sapovala. Like, they lost some serious quality players and first line players in depth. So that means he's got the potential to be the guy there and have a monster season. And so far he's off to doing exactly that to start the season. And a lot of people think he's got the potential to be the first overall selection. And you know, I think he could be in the NHL sooner than later. Perhaps a little bit sooner than some of these other guys. I'm looking at him at being in the NHL in 1 to 2 years. Do you see his timeline being that quick as well, or do you think he's going to need a little bit more incubation period, like maybe like Shane Wright did?
Yeah, I don't have as good a feel on this player, but certainly having that exceptional status, and he has had, to mature a lot earlier than some other players being in the OHL so early. I think that that probably is going to help him reach the NHL quicker. And certainly, as you mentioned, he had a bit of a muted role last season, but he was still excellent in that capacity. So I think you see some explosion from him this year. then maybe there's another year, and then he could be pretty ready to step into a role. I would imagine a little bit sooner than some of the other CHL colleagues. But yeah, he's an exciting one. I'm really excited to see what happens with him this year, because in the little bit you saw from him in the limited ice time, it was pretty impressive last season. And now he's got, a lot more responsibility and role and time to show what he can do. So yeah, I think that he's still, I would be surprised if he makes it all the way to one, just because some of the other competition there, but I also would be surprised to see him fall too much. Outside the top 10 would be shocking. So I think he'll be in that range, of maybe like 3 to 7 or something like that would be my expectation. I think it depends on long term whether he's a center or not. Do you have a sense of that?
Yeah, I think he projects as a center, all right, because he's a good two-way player and he's a good tenacious forechecker. He backchecks and competes hard too. He's got a nice ability to create plays. He's a playmaker, but he can also finish. So I think he'd be a really good center. And centers are hard to find at the NHL level. I think he could be a top two center on most teams. But yeah, I could see I could not not, I could, not that I'm saying I could see him decline and dip this season, but I could just see some of the other guys that we're talking about on this episode doing more. And not that he falls, but other people pass him.
Yeah, I think it's also quite possible that because we have seen so much of Michael Mesa over the years, you get into this thing where you start to really be critical of a lot
Yeah,
of things.
that's a thing.
And I think that that could hurt him, in terms of people start nitpicking every little thing, or he hasn't improved more in this area. Whereas other players you just haven't seen as much of, and you're not able to make those critiques. So regardless of what happens between now and June, I think Mesa is going to be someone you're going to be interested in drafting in your fantasy team and should be a productive NHLer.
For sure. Who's your next guy?
Matthew Schaefer. And if there's any defenseman that is going to push for the top role, I think it's going to be him. We will see about that. He is currently consolidated number 4 on EP's list, 6'2", 183 pound. He's a left-handed D, which might work just a little bit against him in the sense that right-handed Ds tend to have a little bit more of that interest from teams. He also, I would say that this is a very forward-heavy draft. Last year, we had a lot of great D. 2022, we had a pretty heavy D draft. 2018 was a pretty heavy D draft. This one is not that. I think this is much more forward-heavy. Yeah, but he so far seems like he's going to be in that top 10 group, if not top 5. He also had mono to start the season, so that held him out a little bit. So he had a little bit of a slow start, and there was concerns that maybe he'd be a little bit of a struggle out of the gate. But 3 points in 3 games so far is where he's at, and I think it's kind of interesting to note that he's one of these guys who's extremely young for this draft class. He's a September 5th birth date, so he's just 10 days away from being eligible for next year's draft. So that might be something that teams factor in, especially if he has what all signs point to a pretty outstanding draft season, even though it may be a little delayed, or maybe he picks up steam towards the second half. He could be a really high riser, knowing that he's young for this draft season and had the illness to start. That might make him slide a little bit, or maybe teams reach for him. But either way, I think he's going to be someone that's going to be of interest. What I don't know, Pete, and what I'm still wondering is that, and I haven't seen enough of him to really make an opinion. I'm going to be watching closely throughout the year. But so far, to me, he seems like a guy who's really good all around. He's from what I've seen, he's good in a lot of different situations. He's pretty good defensively. He has some offensive capabilities, but I don't know that he's a super standout offensive guy quite yet. And so that's what I'm wondering. Like, is he a Zane Parekh type, or is he more of a two-way guy, maybe like a Zeev Bouyamh from last year, who's, got some offense but good in all situations, but maybe you're not expecting that much offense out of. That's what I'm wondering. But we're going to learn a lot from him this season. Looking at his PNHLE is kind of hilarious because he only has a few games under his belt, but he went from 45 PNHLE last year up to 100 or 94. So We need a little bit more data to even out what's going to happen with him. But yeah, I've been really impressed with what I've seen so far in the small sample size, and I think he has a long way to go, and it'll be fun to see him with the Erie Otters, and hopefully he'll be well enough to be in that CHL USHL game. What do you think of Schaefer?
Yeah, I think he's far and away the best defenseman in the draft class at this stage of the draft class. And, you raise a really legit concern there that his NHL value might exceed his fantasy value. And we talked about that with a lot of the guys in the last year's draft class. And, specifically, we had an episode dedicated towards that. And usually when we say defensemen's NHL value is higher than their fantasy value, it's because they're almost devoid of offensive upside, right? Like Anton Seleyev. They're not devoid of, but it's very low. I don't think that's the case with Schaefer. I think he's got some legit offensive upside. Kind of maybe like Sam Dickinson, where he'll get all the ice time he can handle at pretty much every level he's going to play at, I think. But whether or not that is going to be, a 60-point defenseman remains to be seen. He just could be a really good big minute munching NHL defenseman that gets first line power play time, but it's never going to be the leading scorer among defense at the NHL level, but still a very good player and still have lots of good fantasy value. And if he can develop a little bit more peripheral stats, I'm not sure if he's a big hitter or shot blocker at this stage. I haven't seen those kind of stats yet. But that would really make me a lot more confident in drafting him inside the top 10 of this draft, which is difficult for me to do, drafting a defenseman in the top 10. Just
Oh,
because
wait,
I
no.
yes. But if there was one in this year's draft class, Schaefer would be the guy.
Yeah, normally I might chime in with that data, but we just don't have enough yet to really
Right.
see. But yeah, I agree with you. I would agree that it does not concern me in terms of the Simashev-Selyev mold of not having much offense. I
No.
just mean that, yeah, he might be better two-way kind of guy than all offense, which was really good for his overall projection to the league. Just may not be super exciting, 48 to 50 point guy instead of, 60, 70 plus.
Yeah, he's not going to be a boom or bust. He's going to be a good or great.
Yeah, I like that. Who's your next guy?
My next guy is Roger McQueen. And I think I'm going to have a lot of fun with Lightning McQueen and Kachow gifts and jokes with this player all season. He is consolidated sixth overall. He's a 6'5", 192-pound center. That's really attractive right there. He's got a late birthday too. He's born October 2nd, and he's already 18 and on the older side for this draft class. Again, like Porter Marton, I like this for fantasy as he's an older guy and physically mature, more ready for pro, and should be closer to the NHL than the smaller and younger guys. And, looking at his point projection and development, he had 14 points in his rookie season, and then he popped last year in his sophomore year. Became a point per game player, 21 goals, 51 points in 53 games, and he had 50 penalty minutes. He continues to develop and progress. This season to start, he's got 8 goals and 11 points through the first 8 games. That's a goal a game pace. That's crazy. He had 4 goals in the first game to kick things off with a bang. That's a really impressive first start. But sometimes with it bigger players, you get the injury concern. His injury cut short his U18 tournament after just 2 games. We got a good look at him at the U17s, however, where he had 8 points in 6 games. I think he's injured right now too, and he's not going to be eligible for that USA CHL Top Prospects game, which is a bummer, dude. My most impressive viewings of him so far have come from the Hlinka. He had 5 games and 7 points in that tournament. So yeah, disappointing we're not going to see him in the prospect tournament live because he plays in the dub, so that's like my one and only chance to see him live. So bummed about that. But I've seen him play on video and I've seen him play internationally. He is a force when driving the net With his size and skill, he is a true power forward and a whole lot to handle along the boards or in front of the net. Now, I'll say it again, I've said it before many times. When you have players like this that are physically far advanced than the vast majority of the other players at the junior level, it's really easy for them to exert their will and dominate. But that advantage is gone when you go to the pro level, right? Like he's still going to be one of the bigger players, but not by a wide margin over the vast majority of them. And I think his skating is not a liability, but it's not great. It's good, but not great. Not bad enough to keep him out of the pro level, I don't think, but perhaps enough to keep him out of a top six role. We've seen a lot of players who had terrible skating and made it to the NHL with a lot of hard work and practice and coaching. So we'll see where that goes. He has the potential to be a multi-cat league beast, Victor. I'm not so sure he's going to be like an 80, 100 point player at the NHL level. He might be closer to a 40, 50, 60 point range, all things going his way. But I no doubt that he's going to also provide you with boatloads of other peripheral stats and whatnot as well. Especially if he plays center, he'll still get you the faceoff wins too. So that's a quick 411 on Roger McQueen. What's your initial opinion of him so far this early in the season?
Yeah, I haven't seen as much of him either in terms of live viewings and things like that, but the package, as you're describing, is very appealing, right? He is huge and imposing, and that's something to really watch for too, is how what kind of habits they have. Like, is he, kind of just leaning on these other players, or does he have some habits that are going to be able to translate well enough? Does he have the foot speed? These are some questions that we probably won't even know at the end of the draft cycle, but we'll have a little bit more information. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing that from him, because those are some questions in my head that I have. He's also really old for this draft class. So we got a few guys that are really old. Schaefer, who's young, he's an October 2nd birthday, so just 2.5 weeks removed from being eligible from last year's draft, which would have been a whole different conversation. But he's already got the size and the frame that is very projectable, as you said. It seems hard to imagine he'll be anything less than a bottom six forward at this point, but I think there's certainly upside for a lot more than that, depending how things go. So yeah, I'm excited to see McQueen. And you're right too, the just the names and the gifts are going to be well worth it.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you a question. So I've said twice now, both the players I've talked about, Martonen and McQueen, that they're bigger, they're more mature, they're older, they're closer to the NHL. But at the same time, a lot of bigger players take a little bit longer to develop. And Dauber has the 200 game played breakout threshold that he uses for prospects, but for the bigger guys, he makes it 400 games because they take longer. And here I am on this Dauber Prospects Report podcast saying about how these guys are bigger and older and more mature and closer to the NHL. Which way do you see that argument? Is it depends on the player, everyone's unique, it's case by case, or do you have a general rule of thumb on that?
Yeah, I think it definitely depends on the player. It depends on what role they're gonna fit. I think you look at someone like Quinn Byfield, who was both huge, really young, but also really young, and projected to be a center. Well, that's gonna take a lot longer. And we're just now seeing him just still struggle to fully cement himself as that regular top six center. But I think there were a few things going his way. You saw the raw skill, you saw the size, you saw the ability to be that dominant, center. But that takes a long time to learn that. And LA had other guys in front of him, whereas I think if you're a winger, that's a lot easier, right? You can have fewer responsibilities in all zones. And especially if you're more of a shooter, I think that that's a different situation than if you're sort of a power forward. And I think a big part of it depends on your foot speed. Some of these guys are big, potentially imposing, and they can get around guys or go through guys at the junior level, but that doesn't work. And they have the foot speed problems. That takes a long time, and
Byfield's
that
always been
never
an excellent
works.
skater too, right? And
Yeah.
he's taken time. So maybe I'm getting a little overexcited about the ETA on these guys, eh?
Yeah, I think it depends. Like, I think if they're going to be a winger, it may not take as long. But then you look at someone like Samuel Hanzek, who, saw some games early this season after being drafted, last year. And that was a little bit earlier than some of it's expected. And he's a big guy who's, who certainly was more imposing on his junior teammates. And he was able to translate that at least to some early NHL success. Maybe you could argue it was too early for him and he's back where he should be now. But yeah, I think a lot of factors go into it. Certainly team management, where the team is and what they want from the player has a huge role, right?
Yeah, with a team that drafts them, what their opportunity there is, what their expectations are, what kind of roster blockers do they have, what's their development track record? We talked about that on previous episodes too, and on our organizational rankings, that was a reoccurring theme. So yeah, where these guys get picked will influence that as well. All right, that's enough about that particular topic. Who's your next guy? Hopefully he's not 6'4", 210 pounds.
We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get 200 instantly in bonus bets. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app with the code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get 200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with the code THPN. The crown is yours.
He is definitely not. He's 5'11", 161 pounds. And
You
that would
go.
be Victor Eklund. That my namesake, not really. We share a first name. So Victor Eklund is consolidated number 8. Actually, that changed since I wrote this. He's now consolidated number 12. EP Ringside has him as number 8. And it looks like he's slid around a little bit on these draft ranks. He's a left shot left wing. And yes, he is William Eklund's little brother, in case you were wondering. And like William, Victor's with the Djurgårdens organization, and they have been relegated to the Hockeyallsvenskan. So he is playing for that organization, which is still, pretty great for a draft eligible player to be playing pro hockey. I know it's second division pro hockey, but I kind of think, P, that this is actually a really good level for a draft eligible player in their draft season. Playing in the SHL is sometimes really hard. You might get a limited role. It's a very difficult league. The Hockeyallsvenskan is a tough league, but a little bit easier, I think, to be pretty productive. And so far, he has 11 points in 3 games. I think over the weekend, as recording this, he had a hat trick. That was pretty fun to see. So he's definitely doing really well. This is not the best draft cycle for the Euro players, and so he's one of the top players. And I think it's also worth mentioning he's another older for this draft class, just turned 18 earlier this month. So he's also just a couple weeks away from being eligible from last year's draft, which would have been interesting. So yeah, watching his trajectory, it's pretty linear, straight up, going from it was about 45, 50 points last season to 100, 98 point PNHLE. I'm sure that'll equilibrate down a little bit over the course of the year, but like his brother, I think there's some similarities. He's an excellent playmaker. He's got really good hockey sense. He's really intelligent. He's a really good puck handler. He's certainly not the most physical guy, and he doesn't have the best shot. His skating is kind of, more average to slightly above average. But yeah, I think he's someone who should, probably will be around that 8 to 12 range, something like that, which I think is interesting. If the Sharks improve to be a little bit out of the lottery, do you think that they take William Eklund's little brother? That could be kind of fun, don't you think, Pete?
Yeah, I love brother combinations. They're always so much fun.
But will the Sharks be good enough to not be tempted by a better player? I think that's that seems unlikely to me. I think they're going to be much closer
Well,
to the top of the draft.
who knows? There's a lot to be sorted out between now and the end of the season with standings and prospect rankings and other trades that San Jose might make to move up or down or acquire or whatever draft picks. So anything's possible. I'll be cheering for it. I love seeing brothers play together.
I think it would be fun. Maybe we see a trade to have them move around to select him. That would be kind of fun.
There you go. The Joseph brothers are united in St. Louis right now, so that's a good example there.
I love that so much.
Me too. All right. Ready for my next guy?
Yes.
All right, so my next guy is actually my last guy. I'm glad you brought up Eklund because I don't really know much about the Euros this year, so I'm starved for information. So I picked Anton Frondell for my last guy just because I wanted to learn a little bit about him. I haven't had a lot of views on him, so I'm doing a lot of stat scouting and reading other people's reports here, in all honesty, but he's consolidated number three, Victor, or at least he was when I did my research. He's a 6 foot 196 center, also in the Allsvenskan, playing with Djurgårdens. He was kind of injured to start the season and slow going since his return. He's got 0 points through three games there, but he did have 4 points in six games at the J20 level, and he's been really, really offensively productive last year at that level as well. He's got really smooth hands and a high skill level. I did a little Twitter trolling and watch some of the highlights, and the kid's got some skills for sure. He can handle the puck, and he's got hockey sense, he's got patience and vision. So, like I said, I got a pretty small sample size and limited firsthand analysis on Frondell, and I'm relying on a lot of other people's reports here. But there's some people who are very, very, very favorable about him and think that he's very probable to translate to pro as a prospect. Mainly because he gets a lot of high marks and reviews for his hockey IQ and hockey sense, and the fact that he shows high-end skill. So several prominent prospect writers like Craig Button and Bob McKenzie consider him a top five prospect and could even see him playing his way into the first overall discussion. I mean, he's consolidated number three ranking, so it doesn't seem like that's too outrageous to me. But for me right now, Victor, I've got to say, I remain unconvinced, and I'm a little bit fearful that he could be a better NHL value player with a high floor, but a questionable offensive ceiling and therefore lower fantasy value. I think a larger sample size is required for me as well, like what you were saying about. But what do you think about the top Swede in this year's draft? Could we see a Swede go number one?
Not this year, I don't think. But he is an interesting player. I think for fantasy, you're probably going to want Eklund over Frondell, as you were kind of suggesting. It's a little
Yeah.
early to say that for sure, but I do think Frondell just screams to me high floor. Like he just seems like a really good, he's going to be a really good NHLer. In fact, he reminds me a lot of Lundell, Anton Lundell,
Yeah, in
who.
Florida, exactly.
Yeah, who, and not just because their names sound kind of similar. One's Finn, one's Swede, but he, like his play, you just watch it even now at the level he's playing at, and it's just so mature. Like he's very responsible, two-way, he's good, but somewhat predictable, not as dynamic, but just solid. He doesn't lose the puck a lot, he doesn't get pushed around, he's just really someone that you can depend on. So I and he also really seems to me like a center. And so I think that might help him go a little bit higher than his current ranking. We'll have to see about that. And he's really young for this draft cycle. He's a May 7th birth date, or pretty young, I guess I should say. But I just think I agree with you. He's someone who I think is going to be like Anton Lundell. I mean, right now he's a little bit more relevant, and certainly when Barkov was out, and he has some fantasy relevance, but he's not someone you're going to want to draft and hold for 5 years and wait until he becomes a little bit more exciting. So I agree. I think he's probably going to be a little bit less exciting in fantasy, but really good for his real life team and have a super high floor.
Yeah, I'll draft him and hold him for 5 years. I got no problem with that, but it's not going to be inside the top 10 that I use that pick for that.
Yeah.
All right,
All
who's your
right.
last man?
Well, I accidentally typed in Malcolm Subban and was really confused why I was looking at a goalie, but we're talking about Malcolm Spence here, not Subban.
He just
And
signed in Belleville,
yeah, that was exciting.
where he played his junior.
And he was really good back then.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll work
Yeah.
out for him. Malcolm Spence, who is also not related to Jordan Spence, who at one point I thought might be the case, but they are definitely not related. Malcolm Spence is consolidated at number eight ranked, and he's a 6'2", 201-pound left shot left wing. And he's playing for the Erie Otters, 14 points in 12 games so far. He is a September 22nd birth date, And so that's literally 7 days after the cutoff. So he's super old for this draft class. He's been great so far. I remember him being great at the U18s also. Didn't he score? He scored a big goal at that tournament, right? I can't remember which one, if it was the game winner or one of the ones that changed the tide in that game.
Yeah, it was the, I think it was overtime game winner.
Yeah, I just so he kind of, and maybe that's a small sample size, but he gave me kind of those clutch vibes, you know, guy who was good in that moment. And you know, he's certainly got the frame. He's got some really good tools that you look for in a player. So I think, you know, he's someone who we're gonna have to wait and see, obviously, how this year goes, but I think he's someone that you should be pretty excited about. He's got really good hockey sense. I think there's some extra physicality there and a little bit of nastiness that could be good and maybe can fill some categories for you. Really pretty good shot. He's not the fleetest of foot, but he gets around pretty well for a bigger guy. So I'm pretty excited about him. I think he's probably more of like a middle six forward, but he certainly has like top six upside. I'm not sure that he projects as like a top liner or anything like that, but yeah, he's someone that right now is looking. I guess the one downside to his file is that his PNHLE is kind of flat. You know, it's been kind of in that 60 range for the last few seasons and continues to be so. And that's because of his sort of modest production as a D minus two and D minus one. But that should pop off a bit more this year, and I wouldn't be surprised to see that increase quite a bit. So yeah, Malcolm Spence, you watch him a little bit more closely probably on Team Canada. What are your thoughts on him?
I'm interested, but the biggest concern I have, Victor, is, and you pointed them out, that he's super old for this draft class. And you know, I off the top of the show, I said I don't mind that as long as you see a steady incline in their production. And he hasn't done that. He's been very flatline. In fact, it's kind of dipped a little bit. So I'm really concerned about if he's peaked as a 17-year-old, and whether or not his upside in the NHL is either as an NHL player or anything more than a bottom six, you know, physical energy player with some offensive upside. So I'd be a little much more reluctant to pick him inside the top 10 than any of the other forwards here. But you know, if he was available for me around that 10 range, depending on how the season goes, I think I'd be all right with picking him. And I might even use him as a trade commodity. It's risky trading green bananas because that can blow up in your face when they turn into a superstar. It's a risky proposition, but there's a lot of players who just don't make it. And their trade value is never higher than when they were drafted in the first round inside the top 10.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a long way to go, but we'll see what happens with Malcolm Spence. But so far, there's some interest there. But yeah, I agree. If he's one of these guys who slides, you know, into the teens, then you know, could be a pretty good value there.
For sure. All right. Well, we're at it, guys. So that's it. Thanks very much for listening to Dauber Prospects Report number 79, everybody. For feedback on the show or chat with us, our handles are at DPR underscore show. I am at Farling. Victor's at Victor Nuno 12. And the producer, Jim, who was on with me last week. Hey, Jim. He is Jim IKEHW. Don't forget to follow HockeyPod.net. There's a lot of other good shows on there you can check out. And if you're checking out this show and you don't already, go ahead, subscribe with whatever you're listening to. Give the show a review, 5 stars, and share it on Twitter. Tell all your friends, and we'll see you on the next episode. Until then, keep your stick on the ice.